Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Seventh Sinai Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour. Today is October the 5th, 2025, or is the 15th day of Tishri, 2029. We're on the Feast of Tabernacles. This will be our number 2 sermon for this day. And it's going to be taken chapter 45, Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen G. White, The Fall of Jericho, is the title of our sermon, based on Joshua chapter 5, verse 13 to 15, and chapter 6, verse 7. It says, for the Hebrew had entered Canaan, but they had not subdued it. And to the human appearance, the struggle to gain possession of the land must be long and difficult. It was inhabited by a powerful race who stood ready for the opposing of the invasion of their territory. For the various tribes were bound together by the fear of a common danger. For their horses and iron battle chariots, their knowledge of the country, and their training in the war would give them great advantage. Furthermore, their country was guarded by the fortresses, as cities great and fenced up unto heaven, Deuteronomy 9:1, only in the assurance of a strength not their own could the Israelites hope for success in the impending conflict. One of the strongest fortresses in the land was the large and a wealthy city of Jericho. There lay just before them, only a little distance from their camp at the Gilgal, on the border of a fertile plain abounding with the rich and varied productions of the tropics, its palaces and temples, the abode of the luxury and vice. This proud city, behind its massive battlements, offered defiance unto the Yahweh of Israel. Let's do that again. Behind, its massive battlements offered defiance unto Yahshua, the son of Yahweh of Israel, that was leading the Israelites into the promised land with Joshua. For the Jericho was one of the principal seats of the idol worship, being especially devoted unto the Asherah, the goddess of the moon. Here centered all that was vilest and most degrading in the religion of the Canaanite, for the people of the Israel, in whose minds were fresh the fearful results of their sin at Beth Peor, could look upon this heathen city only with disgust and horror. For the reducing of the Jericho was seen by the Joshua to be the first step in the conquest of the promised land and in Canaan. But first of all, he sought an assurance of the divine guidance, and it was granted him. For the withdrawing from the encampment, for the meditating, and for the praying that the Yahweh of Israel would go before him. Let's do that again. Withdrawing from the encampment for the meditating and for the praying, that the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh of Israel, would go before his people, he beheld an armed warrior of the lofty stature. And who was that armed warrior? That was Yahshua himself, the son of Yahweh, of the lofty stature and commanding presence, with his sword drawn in his hand. For the Joshua's challenge, art thou for us or for our adversary? The answer was given as the captain of the host of the Yahweh. Am I now come? For the same command given unto Moses in the Horeb, loose thy shoes from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy, reveal the true character of the mysterious stranger, for it was the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, as the exalted one, who stood before the leader of Israel, awe-stricken. For the Joshua fell upon his face and worshipped and heard the assurance, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. And he received instructions for the capture of the city. And the obedience unto the divine command, Joshua marshaled the armies of Israel. No assault was to be made. They were simply to make the circuit of the city, bearing the ark of the Yahweh and blowing upon the trumpets. First came the warriors, a body of chosen men, not now to conquer by their own skill and powers, but only by the obedience unto the directions given them from Yahweh the Father. By Yahshua the son of Yahweh, as this mighty warrior that met Joshua and explained to him that he was that one in the cloud that led Israel out of Egypt by Moses. He's the same one now with Joshua. Seven priests with the trumpets followed. Then the ark of the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, surrounded by a halo of the divine glory, was borne by the priests clad in the dress denoting their sacred office. For the army of Israel followed, each tribe with its standard. Such was the procession that compassed the doomed city. No sound was heard but the tread of that mighty host and the solemn peal of the trumpets echoing among the hills and resounding through the streets of the Jericho. For the circuit completed, the army returned in silence to their tents, and the ark was restored to its place in the tabernacle. With wonder and alarm, the watchmen of the city marked every move and reported unto those in authority, for they knew not the meaning of all this display. But when they beheld that mighty host marching around their city once each day with the sacred ark and the attendant priest, the mystery of the scene struck terror and to the hearts of the priests and people. Again, they would inspect their strong defenses, feeling certain they could successfully resist the most powerful attack. Many ridiculed the thought that any harm could come unto them through these singular demonstrations. Others were awed as they beheld the procession that each day would abound Others were awed as they beheld the procession that each day wound about the city, for they remembered that the Red Sea had once parted before this people, and that a passage has just been opened for them through the River Jordan. For they knew not what further wonders Yahweh might work, that Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, might work for them. For 6 days the host of the Israel made the circuit of the city. On the seventh day, came, and with the first dawn of the light, Yahshua marshaled the armies of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh. Now they were directed for their marching 7 times around the Jericho. And at a mighty peal from the trumpet, to shout with a loud voice, for Yahweh had given them the city. For the vast army marched solemnly around the devoted walls. All was silent, save the measured tread of many feet, and the occasional sound of the trumpet, breaking the stillness of the early morning, for the massive walls of the solid stone seemed to defy the siege of men. For the watchers on the walls looked on with rising fear as the first circuit ended. There followed a second, then a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. What could be the object of this mysterious movement? What mighty event was impending? They had not long to wait. As the seventh circuit was completed, a long procession paused. The trumpets, which for an interval had been silent, now broke forth, and a blast had shook the very earth. The walls of the solid stone, with their massive towers and battlements, had tottered and heaved from their foundation, and with a crash fell in ruins onto the earth. For the inhabitants of the Jericho were paralyzed with the terror, and the host of Israel marched in and took possession of the city. For the Israelites had not gained their victory by their own power. The conquest had been holy to Yahshua, and as the first fruits of the land, with the city, and with all that it contained, was to be devoted as a sacrifice unto the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, that was leading the host. For it was to be impressed upon the Israel that in the conquest of the Canaan they were not to fight for themselves, but simply as the instrument for the executing of the will of Yahweh, not to seek for riches or the self-exaltation. Really, the glory of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, their King, before the capture, the command had been given, for the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein. Keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest you make yourselves accursed, and make the camp of Israel accursed, and trouble it. All the inhabitants of the city, with every living thing that is contained, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep, and ass were put to the sword. Only the faithful Rahab, with her household, was spared in the fulfillment of the promise of the spy, for the city itself was burned, its palaces and temples, its magnificent dwellings, with all the luxurious appointments, the rich draperies, and the costly garments were given unto the flame, that which could not be destroyed by fire, the silver and the gold, and the vessels of the brass and of the iron, were to be devoted to the service of the tabernacle. For the very sight of the city was accursed, Jericho was never to be rebuilt as a stronghold. Judgment was threatened upon anyone who should presume to restore the walls that the divine power had cast down. For the solemn declaration was made in the presence of all Israel, cursed be the man before the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, that rises up and buildeth this city, Jericho, for he shall lay the foundation thereof in his firstborn, and in his youngest son shall he set up the gates of it. For the utter destruction of the people of Jericho was for a fulfillment of the commands previously given through the Moses with the concerning of the inhabitants of the Canaan. Thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them, Deuteronomy 17, of the cities of the faithful. Thou shalt save alive nothing of that breed. Should actually read, of the cities of the people, thou shalt save alive anything that breathes. For the Deuteronomy 20 verse 16, unto many these commands seem to be contrary unto the spirit of love and mercy and joy and joining other portions of the Bible, but they were in truth the dictates of the infinite wisdom and goodness. Yahweh was about to abolish Israel in Canaan, to develop among them a nation and government that should be a manifestation of his kingdom upon the earth. They were not only to be inheritors of the true religion, but to disseminate its principles throughout the world. For the Canaanites had abandoned themselves unto the foulest and most debasing heathenism, and it is necessary that the land should be cleared of what would so surely prevent the fulfillment of the Yahweh's gracious purposes. For the inhabitants of the Canaan have been granted ample opportunity for the repentance. 40 years before the opening of the Red Sea and the judgments upon the Egypt and Tisha, had testified unto the supreme power of the Yahweh of Israel. And now the overthrow of the kings of the Midian, of the Gilead and Bashan, has further shown that the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, was above all the gods there, and for the holiness of his character and his abhorrence of his impurity has been evidenced in the judgment visited upon Israel, for the for dissertation and the abominable rite of the Baal Peor. All these events were known unto the inhabitants of Jericho, and there were many who should really have some vision, though they refused to obey it, that Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, the king of Israel, is the king in heaven, also above and upon the earth beneath. Like a man before the flood, for the Canaanites lived only for the blaspheming heaven and defiling the earth, and both love and justice demanded the prompt execution of these rebels against Yahweh and foes to man. For the utter destruction of the people of Jericho was very fulfillment of the commands previously given through the Moses concerning the inhabitants of Canaan. Thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them, destroy Deuteronomy 7:2 of the cities of these people. Thou shalt save alive nothing that breathes, Deuteronomy 20:16. Unto many these commands seem to be contrary to the spirit of love and mercy enjoined in other portions of the Bible, that they were in the truth the dictates of the infinite wisdom and goodness. For Yahweh was about to establish Israel in Canaan, to develop among them a nation and government that should be a manifestation of his kingdom upon the earth. They were not only to be inheritors of the true religion, but to decimate its principles throughout the world. For the Canaanites had abandoned themselves to the foulest and most debasing heathenism, and it was necessary that the land should be cleared of what would so surely prevent the fulfillment of the Yahweh's gracious purposes. For the inhabitants of Canaan had been granted ample opportunity for the repentance 40 years before the opening of the Red Sea and the judgments upon Egypt had testified unto the supreme power of the Yahweh Israel. And now the overthrow of the kings of Midian, of Gilead, and Bashan had further shown that the Yahweh was, as I said, the son of Yahweh was above all the gods. That for the holiness of his character and his abhorrence of the impurity had been evinced in the judgment visited upon Israel for these events were known unto the inhabitants of Jericho, and there were many who should really have conviction, though they refused to obey it, that Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, the king of Israel, is the Yahweh in heaven above and upon the earth beneath, like the men before the flood. The Canaanites lived only to blaspheme heaven and defile the earth, and both love and justice demanded the prompt execution of these rebels against Yahweh and foes to man. How easy the armies of heaven brought down the walls of Jericho. How easy the armies of heaven brought down the walls of Jericho. For that proud city whose bulwarks 40 years before had struck terror unto the unbelieving side, for the mighty ones of Israel has said, I have given into thine hand Jericho. Against that word, human strength was powerless. By the faith and the blood of the Yahshua, the walls of the Jericho fell down. Now notice I added that faith and the blood, because that's where the power is at, because Yahshua is the one that this blood represents. But it is of his blood, by the faith and the blood of the Yahshua, the walls of Jericho fell down. That's the first time that's ever been added like that. Hebrews 11:30. For the captain of the Yahshua's host communicated only with the Yahshua. Let's go back and read that whole thing over and strike out that last statement that I made. By the faith in the walls of the Jericho fell down. Let's reread that again. By the faith and the words of the Yahshua, the captain of Yahshua's host, the walls of the Jericho fell down. Hebrews 11:30. For the captain of the Yahshua's host, for the captain Yahshua of the Yahweh's host, the prophet, communicated only with Joshua. For he did not reveal himself unto all the congregation, and it rested with them to believe or doubt the words of Joshua, to obey the commands given by him in the name of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, or to deny his authority. For they could not see the host of the angels who attended them with the leadership of the Son of Yahweh, Yahshua, for they might have reason. For unmeaning movements are these, and how ridiculous is the performance of the marching daily around the walls of the city, blowing trumpets of the ram horn. This can have no effect upon those towering fortifications, but the very plan of the continuing this ceremony through so long a time prior unto the final overthrow of the walls afforded opportunity for the development of the faith among the Israelites, for it was to be impressed upon their minds that their strength was not in the wisdom of man, nor in his might, only in the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, King of Israel, the King of this, the Yahshua of their salvation. They were thus to become accustomed for the relying wholly upon the divine leader, Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh. For the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, will do great things for those who trust in him as the leader of the captain of the Yahshua, Yahweh of the host. For the reason why his professed people have no greater strength is that they trust so much unto their own wisdom and do not give the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, an opportunity for the revealing of his power in their behalf. For he will help his believing children in every emergency if they will place their entire confidence in him and faithfully obey him. Soon after the fall of Jericho, He also determines to attack Ai, a small town among the Ravens, a few miles to the west of the Jordan Valley. Far sent under this place, brought back the report that the inhabitants were but few and that only a small force would be needed to overthrow it. For the great riches that Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, had gained for them had made the Israelites self-confident, because he had promised them the land of the Canaan, they felt secure and failed to realize that the divine help alone could give them success. Even the Joshua laid his plan for the conquest of Ai without seeking counsel from Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. For the Israelites had begun to exalt their own strength, and to look with contempt upon their foes. As easy victory was expected, and 3,000 men were thought sufficient to take the place, these rushed to the attack without the assurance that Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, would be with them. They advanced nearly into the gate of the city, only to encounter the most determined resistance. Panic-stricken at the numbers of the thorough preparation of their enemies, he fled in the confusion down the steep descent. The Canaanites were in the hot pursuit, for they chased them from before the gate and smote them, and they're going down as though the loss is small as to numbers. But 36 men being slain, the defeat was disheartening unto the whole congregation. For the hearts of the people melted and became as water. This was the first time they had met the Canaanites in the actual battle. Now, when I read Canaanites, I'm talking about the descendants of the Philistines. These are Palestinians. These are the half-brothers to Isaac. An actual battle, and if put to flight before the defenders of this little town, what would be the result in their greater conflicts before them? Joshua looked upon their ill success as an expression of the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh's displeasure, and in the distress and apprehension, he rent his clothes and fell onto the earth upon his face before the ark of the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Until the eventide, he and the elders of the Israel and put dust upon their heads. Alas, Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, he cried, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over the Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? Oh, Yahshua, what shall I say when Israel turneth their backs before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land shall hear of it, and shall environ us round and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do unto thy greatness? For the answer from the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, was, get thee up. Wherefore lies thou thus upon thy face? Israel has transgressed my covenant. Which I commanded them. It was a time for the prompt and decided action and not for the despair and lamentation, there was secret sin in the camp, and it must be searched out and put away before the presence and blessing of the Yeshua could be with his people. Neither will I be with you any more except ye destroy the curse from among you. For Yeshua, the son of Yahweh's command, had been disregarded by one of those appointed for the executing of his judgment, and the nation was held accountable for the guilt of the transgressor, for they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and dissembled also. Instructions were given unto Joshua for the discovery and punishment of the criminal. The law was to be employed for the detection of the guilty, for the sinner was not directly pointed out, the matter being left in doubt for a time, that the people might feel their responsibility for the sin of the existing among them, and thus be led to, for the searching of the heart and humiliation before the Yahweh. Early in the morning, Joshua gathered the people together by their tribe, and a solemn and impressive ceremony began. Step by step, the investigation went on. Closer and still closer came the fearful test. First the tribe, then the family, then the household. Then the man was taken, and Achan, the son of Carmi, of the tribe of Judah, was pointed out by the finger of Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, as the troubler of Israel, for the establishing of his guilt beyond all question, leaving no ground for the charge that he had been unjustly condemned. For Joshua solemnly adjured Achan to acknowledge the truth. The wretched man made a full confession of his crime. Indeed, I have sinned against the Yeshua, the son of Yahweh of Israel. Indeed, I have sinned against Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, king of Israel. When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment, and 200 shekels of the silver, and a wedge of the gold of the 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them, and I took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent. For the messengers were immediately dispatched to the tent, where they removed the earth at the place specified, and behold, it was hid in his tent, and the silver under it, and they took them out of the midst of the tent, and brought them unto Joshua, and laid them out before the Yeshua. Sentence was pronounced, and immediately executed. Why hast thou troubled us, said the Yeshua? The Yeshua shall trouble. Let's do that again. Why hast thou troubled us, said the Joshua. Let's do that again. For the sentence was pronounced and immediately executed. Why hast thou troubled us, said Joshua? For the Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, king of Israel, shall trouble thee this day, as the people had been held responsible for the Achan sin and had suffered from the consequences. They were, through their representatives, to take part in his punishment. All Israel stoned him with the stone. Then there was raised over him a great pile of the stone, for a witness unto the sin and its punishment. Wherefore, the name of that place was and is called unto this very day the Valley of Achor. That is trouble in the book of the Chronicles. His memorial is written. For the Achor as a troubler of Israel, 1 Chronicles 2:7. For the Achan's sin was committed in the defiance of the most direct and solemn warning and the most mighty manifestation of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh's power. Keep yourself from the accursed sin, lest you make of yourselves a curse, has been the proclamation unto all Israel. For the command was given immediately after the miraculous passage of the Jordan and the recognition of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh's covenant by the circumcision of the people after the observance of the Passover and the appearance of the angel, Yahshua is the angel of the covenant, as the captain of the Yahshua's host. It has been followed by the overthrow of the Jericho, giving evidence of the destruction that will surely overtake all the transgressors of the Yahweh's law. For the fact that the divine power alone has given the victory unto Israel, that they had not come into the possession of the Jericho by their own strength, gave solemn weight unto the command prohibiting them from the partaking of the spoil. For the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, by the might of his own word, had overthrown this stronghold. Let's do that again. For the Yahshua, Son of the Yahweh, King of the heaven and earth, by the might of his own word, had overthrown this stronghold. As the contest was his, and unto him alone the city with all that it contained was to be devoted unto him, Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, the captain of the Yahweh's host. Of the millions of the Israel, there was but one man who, in that solemn hour of the triumph and of the judgment, had dared for the transgression of the command of the other. For the agent's covetousness was excited by the sight of that costly robe of the Shinar, even when it had brought him face to face with the death. He called it a goodly Babylonian garment. One sin had led unto another, and he appropriated the gold and silver and devoted unto the treasury of Yahshua. And let's read that again. For the one sin had led unto another, and he appropriated the gold and silver devoted unto the treasury of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh. He robbed Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, of the first fruits of the land of Canaan. For the deadly sin that led unto the Achan's ruin had its root in the covetousness of all the sins, one of the most common and of the most lightly regarded. while the other offense is met with a detection and punishment, how ready does the violation of the Tenth Commandment so much as call for censure? For the enormity of this sin and its terrible results are the lessons of the 18th history. Covetousness is an evil of the gradual development, for the Achan had cherished the greed of gain until it became a habit, binding him in the fetters well nigh impossible to break. While the fostering of this evil, he would have been filled with the horror at the thought of bringing disaster upon the Israel. But his perceptions were deadened by sin, and when temptation came, he fell an easy prey. Are not similar sins still committed in the face of the warnings as solemn and explicit? We are as directly forbidden to indulge covetousness as was Achan to appropriate the spoils of the Jericho, for the Yahweh has declared it to be idolatry. We are warned, you cannot serve Yahweh and Mammon. Matthew 6:24. Take heed and beware of the covetousness. Luke 12:15. Let it not be once named among you, Ephesians 5:3. We have before us the fearful doom of the Achan, of the Judas, and Ananias, and Sapphira. Back of all these, we have that of the Lucifer, the son of the morning, who, coveting a higher state, forfeited forever the brightness and bliss of the heaven. And yet, notwithstanding all these warnings, covetousness abounds everywhere. Its slimy track is seen. It creates a discontent and dissension in family. It excites envy and hatred in the poor against the rich. It prompts the grinding oppression of the rich toward the poor. And this evil exists not in the world alone, but in the church. How common even here to find selfishness, avarice, overreaching, neglect of the charities, and robbery of the Yahweh in the tithes and offerings among church members. Among church members in good and regular standing, there are, alas, many aching. Many a man comes statedly to church and sits at the table of the Yahshua, while among his possessions are hidden unlawful gains, the things that Yahweh has cursed. For a goodly Babylonian stomach, multitudes sacrifice the approval of conscience and their hope of heaven. Multitudes barter their integrity and their capabilities for the usefulness for a bag of silver shekels. For the cries of the suffering poor are unheeded. The gospel, in other words, the same thing as the preaching of the Son, Son of the Salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20 of the new and living way, the light is hidden in its course. For the scorn of the worldling is kindled by the practices that give the lie to the Christian profession. And yet the covetous professor continues to heap up treasure. Will a man rob Yahweh? Yet you have robbed me, Malachi 3:8, says Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Now who are they robbing? They're robbing Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, because he's the head of his church here on earth. For Achan's sin brought disaster upon the whole nation. For one man's sin, the displeasure of Yahweh will rest upon his church till the transgression is searched out and put away. For the influence most to be feared by the church is not that of the open opposer, infidel, and blasphemers, but of the inconsistent professors of the Yeshua. These are the ones that keep back the blessing of the Yahweh of Israel and bring weakness upon his people. When the church is in difficulty, when coldness and spiritual detention exist, giving occasion for the enemies of Yahweh to triumph, then instead of folding their hands and launching their unhappy state, let its members inquire if there is not an aching in the camp with the humiliation and searching of the heart that each seeks to discover the hidden sin that shut out Yahweh's presence. Achan acknowledged his guilt, but when it was too late for the confession to benefit himself, he had seen the armies of Israel return from Ai defeated and disheartened. Yet he did not come forward and confess his sin. He had seen Joshua and the elders of Israel bowed to the earth in a grief too great for words. Had he then made confession, he would have given some proof of true repentance. But he still kept silent. He had listened to the proclamation that a great crime had been committed, and had even heard his character definitely stated. Let's read that again. For Achan had listened unto the proclamation that a great crime had been committed, and had even heard his character definitely stated, but his lips were sealed. Then came the solemn investigation, how his soul filled with terror as he saw his tribe pointed out, then his family and his household. But still he uttered no confession until the finger of Yahweh was placed upon him. Then when his sin could no longer be concealed, he admitted the truth. How often are similar confessions made? There is a vast difference between admitting facts after they have been proved and confessing sins known only unto ourselves and to Yahweh. Achan would not have confessed had he not hoped by so doing to avert the consequences of his crime. But his confession only served to show that his punishment was just. There was no genuine repentance for sin, no contrition, no change of purpose, no abhorrence of evil. So confessions will be made by the guilty when they stand before the bar of Yahweh after every case has been decided for life or death. For the consequences, the result to himself will draw from each an acknowledgement of his sin. It will be forced from the soul by an awful sense of the condemnation and a fearful looking for the judgment, but such confession cannot save the sinner. So long as they can conceal their transgressions from their fellow men, many like Achan feel secure and said in themselves that Yahweh will not be strict to mark iniquity. All too late, their sins will find them out in that day. when they shall not be cursed, but the sacrifice or offering forever. When the records of the heaven shall be opened, the judge will not in words declare unto man his guilt, but will cast one penetrating, convicting glance on every deed, every transaction of the life will be vividly impressed upon the memory of the wrongdoers. For the person will not, as in the Joshua's day, need to be hunted out from the side of the family, but his own lips will confess his shame. For the sin hidden from the knowledge of men will then be proclaimed unto the whole world. This brings the end of our study on chapter 45. Now this brings the end of our study for the hour.